You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Welcome, everybody. I should mention that this talk is part of a Lens on Privacy and Security that we are co-hosting with CRCS over at the School of Engineering. It's just a lens that's highlighting different issues of privacy and security and folks working on them. And so Doreen Tu, who is a Berkman Fellow, is here to talk to us about cybercrimes in Taiwan. Doreen comes to us from Taiwan's District Prosecutor's Office in Taipei, and we're so glad to have her. Welcome, Doreen.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to Berkman Center Luncheon. My name is Doreen Tu, as you know. I work as a prosecutor at Taipei District Court Prosecutor's Office. And today I'm really honored to be here to share the cybercrimes in Taiwan with you. And before we start, I think there might be some questions in your mind. For example, where's Taiwan? Is it small? And what kind of language do we speak? And is internet widespread there? So at the beginning, I'm going to give you a simple idea about Taiwan. Then we'll take a look at the legislation history on cybercrime in Taiwan. And then I'm going to give you some brief introductions on the most common cases of cybercrimes in Taiwan. And finally, we'll take a look at the challenges we have. So for those who don't know where's Taiwan, this is Asia. This is a map of Asia. And I don't want to harm your eyes, so here it is, a small island. And it looks like this. And the size is really small. It's about one third of Tennessee and only a little bit bigger than Massachusetts. But the population we have is about 23 million people. That's three times more than Massachusetts. So mass is never crowded to me. It's very spacious. The languages we speak is Mandarin and the same language in China. But in writing, we use the standard Chinese characters, while in China, they use the simplified Chinese characters. And although we speak the same language, we have our independent jurisdiction. And how about the prevalence of internet in Taiwan? According to the Internet World Stats, the world internet usage grows rapidly during the last decade. And now the average of internet usage is about 28.7% penetration, which means that about 3% out of 10 are the internet users. And in Taiwan, the prevalence is growing even faster. In 2000, the penetration rate in Taiwan is 28%, at 28.1%. But in last year, 2010, it has reached 70% of the penetration. So 7 out of 10 people in Taiwan are the internet users. And compared to other areas in Asia, the penetration rate we have is relatively high. And as the internet grows fast in Taiwan, cybercrimes also emerge in a rapid speed and finally brought its impacts on our legislation. And I think you might be curious about the penetration in the US, and here it is, 77.3. So now you've know a little bit more about Taiwan. Let's take a look at the legislation history on cybercrimes. We have two major amendments on cybercrimes. One is in 1997 and the other is in 2003. Let's take a look at the 1997 ones. When cybercrimes first emerged, the lawmakers thought that there seemed to be no substantial difference in these crimes. For example, the offline gambling went online, the pornography went online, the copyright infringement went online, and the fraud went online. But in the eyes of the lawmakers, there seems to be nothing substantially different. So the lawmakers just adapted a few articles in the criminal code to expand their scopes to encompass the new crimes. For example, in Chapter 15 of our criminal code, the offense of forging instruments or seals, Article 220 says that an electromagnetic record and the voices, images, or symbols that are shown through computer process should be considered document. And so since it is considered as document, chapter 15 can apply to offenses against them. And another example is in chapter 29, offense of larceny. It's in Article 323 says that an electromagnetic record shall be considered a personal property. And so if some electromagnetic record was deleted, it would be treated as a personal property theft, and articles in this chapter could be applied. And since the electromagnetic record was considered personal property, other chapters in respect of personal property, such as chapter 32, offenses of fraudulence, could be applied to offense against the electromagnetic records. So in short, the amendment in 1997 tried to analogize the cybercrimes to the existing crimes, and the electromagnetic records were protected as properties, and the related offenses were analogous to property offenses. However, with the rapid development of high-tech crimes, the 1997 amendment became insufficient to cover every conduct in cybercrimes. And at that time, one of the most common type of cybercrimes was about a theft in an online game named Lineage, and which later triggered the 2003 amendment. And I just want to make sure how many people have heard of Lineage here. Yeah, great. And Lineage came to Taiwan in 2000 and soon became extremely popular. It's an online game from South Korea. And username and passwords are required to play this game. Players would obtain a lot of virtual treasure, such as weapons and armors and things like that you can see on the pictures. And this virtual treasure was electromagnetic record and was considered personal property. And because these virtual treasures are so valuable, so there are websites for a transaction of their virtual treasure. The case went like this. Some Lineage players went to the internet cafe to play Lineage, but the perpetrator had already infected the computers in the internet cafe, and the function of the Trojan was to collect all the accounts and passwords and send it to the perpetrator. And with these accounts and passwords, the perpetrator could easily log into the games and alter the virtual treasures into his own possession. So in this case, you can see that the conduct of the perpetrator's offense include infecting the computers with Trojan, entering the account and password without authorization, and altering the electromagnetic records, that is the virtual treasure. And the lawmakers have finally found out that the existing amendment was apparently incapable of covering all these conducts. So the awareness of the existence of substantial difference in cybercrimes prompted a new amendment in 2003. In 2003, the Legislative Yuan, that is our Congress, has passed and promulgated a new chapter called Offenses Against the Use of Computer, which focused on the crimes targeting on computers. And there are six articles in the new amendment, in the new chapter. Article 358 is focusing on the protection of the safety of access. It says a person who without reason enters another's account and password or evade the computer security system or takes advantage of the system's loophole to hack other's computer would be punished. And here, the without reason means that include that without authorization or by exceeding authorized access. And 359, a person without reason obtains, deletes, or alters the electromagnetic record of another's computer, just like the transfer of the treasure, the virtual treasure, and will be punished according to this article. And this focuses on the protection of the integrity, security, and the control of the electromagnetic records and the data. 360 is focusing on the protection of efficacy, efficiency, and security of the computer. And 361 is an enhancement of the offense against governmental or public computer. And Article 362 is about the conduct of creating malware. And 363 is the requirement of the victim's complaint to prosecute. that is, the prosecution of the offenses specified in these articles may be actionable only upon complaint.
Is that a complaint by authorities?
No, complaint by the victims. Yeah.
And does without reason refer to permission or justification?
Excuse me?
When it says without reason, does that mean, like, I have a good reason for doing this, or does that mean, oh, it's my password, I gave you permission?
No, the judge is the one to decide whether there's a good reason or not. But good reason in Chinese, it's 无故. It means you don't have a reasonable reason. you know, so it's if analogous to the articles here in the U.S., it's like without authorization or by exceeding authorized access. Okay. These two kind of categories. Yeah.
So stop it. If somebody has stolen thousands of credit card numbers, but they haven't used any of them yet, no prosecution can occur until the first one is used and that person reports that something is wrong.
You mean without the victim's
right.
complaint? Well, yeah, we will start investigating. But during the process of investigating, we'll find out a lot of victims. And there must be some of them, or a lot of them, want to file the complaint. Because with filing the complaint, they might get some compensation for themselves. Right. So it's not really a strict requirement.
Right. But they have to show an actual monetary loss in order to file a complaint?
No.
Okay.
As long as they say, I'm the victim, yeah. and I want to file a complaint against the offense, That's fine.
Okay.
That's it. So the requirement is quite low. Yeah. So this is the after the two amendments, the general structure of the legislation of cybercrime is like this. On the left, in the left square, is the 2003 amendments, and the new chapter of criminal code promulgated in 2003. It's the offenses against the use of computer, which focuses on the offense targeting on computers. And in the right square, there are other related rules in which computers are as tools, such as fraud, gambling, Copyright Act, and so on. And later on, we'll see some cases, and we'll see this slide again after each case, and we'll know more about the application of the rules. So now, with the understanding of the legislation history, I'd like to give you some brief introductions of the most common cybercrime cases in Taiwan, including online fraud, copyright infringement, and the computer hacking, which is the lineage case. And let's take a look at the online fraud case first. In the online fraud cases, usually the perpetrator would first acquire some valid email accounts and passwords, maybe by identity theft or simply by purchasing them from some other vendors. Then the perpetrator would use these dummy email accounts to post some fraudulent ads on the most popular online sales website, just like Yahoo, or the other one is eBay. Okay. And some of the merchandise in the fraudulent ads may be expensive, high-end products. But in my experience, to my surprise, a lot of the merchandise are rather the inexpensive and popular and up-to-date items instead, from daily commodities to concert tickets, whatever you can imagine. And I could still remember that several years ago, there was a product called Magic Mop. And when it first came to market, I didn't even bother paying any attention to it. And then I began to have cases in which the victims complaining about not receiving the Magic Mops they ordered online. That's all. What was that? And I Googled it, and it looked like this. But somehow I found it so tempting that I almost ordered one for myself. So you can see that the perpetrators would use it as a trick. So when the purchaser decides to order something, he or she something online, he or she would contact the merchant, and that is the perpetrator, to maybe for more details about the merchandise or for the delivery. And the most common way to contact the merchant is by phone numbers or Skype account or MSN account. Depends on what kind of contact ways the merchant offered in the advertisements. And of course, the perpetrator would acquire the phone number or the Skype or MSN account from the mules or other unwitting innocent people in advance. So these contact ways will not reveal the real identity of the perpetrator either. And after some contact back and forth, the purchaser would make the payment, usually by transferring the amount into the bank account the perpetrator appointed. And of course, this bank account is a dummy account. So when the purchaser didn't receive anything at the expected time, he or she would again contact the merchant. But soon he'll find out that it's harder or even impossible to reach the merchant anymore. And at this time, at this moment, the purchaser may realize that he has been cheated, and he would always like this, file a complaint to the police officer, and that meets the requirement, okay? So that's simple. And the police officer will start investigating and also inform the bank to temporarily freeze the dummy account. But most of the time, the payment has been transferred out or withdrawn already, so the money is not there anymore. And not surprisingly, the police officer will find out that the bank accounts and the phone numbers belong to the mules or other unwitting innocent people. And the email account, Skype account, or the or MSN account are usually hacked, which means that the account owners themselves had no idea that their account had been used by the perpetrators. For the mules who sold out their bank accounts or phone number to the perpetrators, since they knowingly assisted the perpetrator by offering their own bank accounts or phone numbers, they'll be prosecuted as accessory to fraud. However, if the evidence is not sufficient to prove their intention to assist fraud, they'll simply be discharged. And as to the email account, Skype account, and MSN account, police officer will try to trace their IP address. But this relies on the ISP's retention of the log files. And if luckily the data is still available, not erased, and if luckily the IP address were assigned in the areas in Taiwan, then police officer will try to trace the physical location based on the IP address. However, an experienced perpetrator would always conceal his real IP behind some proxy server. So instead of the real location of the perpetrator, usually the police could only trace to the physical location of the proxy service. And if the IP's address was assigned to areas cross-border, that is not in Taiwan, the small island, it's really difficult to keep tracing it. Yeah?
You go through a lot of trouble to do all this, and you also said that it's mostly small sums of money. So is it the same person doing a little bit through the course of
maybe
the year?
Later on we'll see a breakthrough after we had an agreement with mainland China. Actually, it's a big group. So although the amount each victim's transfer is very little, mm-hmm. but accumulated it's a big amount. And they don't do it for regular. They do it for a short time, then they'll transfer to other commodities, and for a short time, and transfer to another commodity. So once you know that, oh, you cannot buy magic map online, mm-hmm. but they'll transfer to other commodities. Mm-hmm. So it's always changing. Yeah.
With many American credit card banks, for fraudulent charges that are under a certain amount, mm-hmm. they don't do investigations. Is that part of the cause of why people are doing very small?
Honestly, in Taiwan, every case, as long as the victim file a complaint, the police officer will start investigating. That's the big difference. So at the beginning, I thought, under some amount, there will not be investigation here, but not in Taiwan. As long as you are the victim, you file a complaint, the police officer will try to investigate. But maybe the real perpetrators will not be tracked down, but the investigation will start. Yeah, please.
So it's not as though they're setting up fake bank accounts for each like $20 payment. It's that they'll set it up, get $20 payments from like hundreds of people, and then shut it down the next day type of thing?
No, actually they buy, you mean the dummy account, bank account, right?
Yeah, like,
yeah, actually,
they don't have one for each payment. It's just a short period of time.
No, yeah, actually, we'll talk about this later, but I can tell you right now. Actually, they bought the bank account from other people in advance. So the money and they put on the perpetrators will put the advertisement online and maybe for 2 or 3 days. But within these 2 or 3 days, a lot of victims will serve it and order online and the money come in. And after maybe within 1 week, one of the victims may file a complaint and the police officer will call the bank to freeze the account and the account is dead. And the perpetrator cannot withdraw money from the account anymore. So every bank account, every dummy bank account is alive for, Yeah, I mean, it's used for maybe within 1 week. Okay. So they need a lot of dummy accounts. And later we'll see a new kind of online fraud. Yeah,
what is the revised process flow when you're dealing with, let's say, an international perpetrator?
Uh-huh.
What do you do in that case when the person is living in China or living in South Korea?
Yeah, then we're dead, you know. If the people is not in Taiwan, for China now we have the agreement in 2009. We'll see that later. And we have much better cooperation with China. But if from other countries, maybe we'll ask for the judicial mutual assistance. But it takes a long time. And for this kind of cases, sometimes we just light it aside and someday maybe there are new, more evidence coming and we'll start the investigation again. Yeah. And please.
Related to that, what proportion of these crimes are committed by Taiwanese criminals versus foreign criminals?
I don't know the data, but for us, yeah.
Anecdotally, what do you think?
The perpetrator we can track down are all Chinese.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. Those foreigners, well, we failed to track down them, but maybe we can have much, please.
What payment method is usually involved in these crimes? Are they using PayPal? Are they using some Taiwanese equivalent of PayPal?
Transfer money, always transfer money. The perpetrators want only cash.
Now, transfer money means something like PayPal, right?
It's just like this. The perpetrator will give the account, the real account number, to the purchaser and says, please transfer your payment into this account. And then you transfer cash from the purchaser's own account.
So you go to your bank.
Yeah, bank to bank.
ACH.
It's not
without,
physically go to your bank.
You mean without the intermediary of PayPal, okay.
No. Most of the time, the purchaser will not go through the PayPal. Just directly into their bank account.
Actually, I have the same question. They didn't involve any escrow accounts like PayPal. So is it common, such way is common in Taiwan? Because
yeah, quite common.
Directly to
somebody.
No, directly to the, it's quite common.
It. PayPal is owned by eBay, so eBay wants people to use PayPal, so.
Yeah, it's quite common for the perpetrator because through PayPal, it's more complicated for them. So they might make up some excuses, just like, this is my friend's sister's account, and I do need this money quickly, so please transfer it. Instead of using PayPal, instead of using credit cards, please transfer cash into this account. And at this time, the perpetrator will reduce a little bit amount or give some discount if you can transfer the money directly into the appointed account he appoints. So the victims will think, that's good. So they'll do that. So we go on, okay? And now let's take a look at the structure. And the fraud itself, as to the application of the rules, the fraud will be punished according to the criminal code, the chapter fraud. And as to if the perpetrator also accesses others' MSN or Skype account as a contact way without authorization, this conduct will be charged under the 2003 amendment in the left square. Okay, so this is a case where the defendant sold out his phone number to the perpetrator. For maybe for about $40 US, and in the red square is the fact. And in this case, the perpetrator committed the online fraud and used this phone number from the defendant, the mule phone number, to contact purchasers. And the defendant was convicted as accessory to fraud and sentenced for 3 months imprisonment, which could be commuted to a fine. So now you've known. Approximately about $30 a day. If 3 months sentence commuted to a fine, and you just $30 for a day and times 3 months. That's it. Yeah. So it's more, much the fine is much more than the money he got from selling the phone number. Yeah. Yeah. So let's take a look at the new online fraud. Maybe you are more interested in this. Okay, when I was preparing for this talk, my colleagues in Taiwan told me that now the perpetrators have a new way to fraud. As you've already known, the perpetrators have to acquire dummy bank in advance. And initially, they would buy the banks from people, from some poor people. Or sometimes they persuade the homeless people on the streets to go to the bank and apply the bank accounts for them with a little money. But thanks to the medias or the news propaganda about the conviction judgments on selling accounts, it's harder and harder for the perpetrators to buy the dummy accounts from people. And recently, the perpetrator have found some better substitute for the bank account. That is the virtual account, MyCard. But what is MyCard? MyCard was originally designed for online game players to store their points they bought for playing online games. For example, on the Warcraft, everyone knows Warcraft, right? It takes 5 points per hour to play the online game. So the gamers will need a storage to store their points, and MyCard was a virtual account for that. And email address and phone number are required when applying. And it is very, as you can understand, and that the MyCard issuer doesn't have the capability to verify whether the email address and phone numbers are the valid real ones. So anyway, it is easy to add value by purchasing points. And you can purchase points online or go to the convenience stores to purchase points. And for your information, we have more than 9,000 convenience stores in Taiwan. And actually, we have the highest density of convenience stores in Taiwan. So it's really easy. And one important thing is that you don't have to be the account owner to add value. So other people can add value for you. So that's the way it works. And that's why the perpetrators loved it. And because it is really convenient, so now more and more merchandise can be purchased with MyCard. And these are some merchandise bought by iCard. Yeah, please.
Why does MyCard need your email address and phone number if they don't use it to verify you?
Actually, I shouldn't say that they cannot verify you. Actually, they could verify you, but your real identity, your real name, your real address cannot be revealed by the phone number or the email account.
Right, because it could be a throwaway cell phone.
Yeah, some cell phone or some made up, some email address you applied not using your real name,
right,
or just hacked some email address.
Yes.
And so it's a very good way for the perpetrators to conceal their real identity. So now what the perpetrators have to do is that to get my card account first, which is much easier than getting a bank account, and then acquire some valid MSN account or Skype account, either by identity theft or purchasing from some other vendors. Then begin to chat with the friends on the contact list. And then the perpetrator will make up some excuses and to ask the respondents to go to the convenience store to buy the points for them. I know this sounds stupid, but really people are fooled, you know, because since the respondent may misbelieve that he's really talking to one of his friends, and it's quite easy to find a convenience store nearby and purchase the points. So people are really hooked and do the favor for the perpetrators. So for the perpetrators, this is even faster and easier since they don't need to collect bank accounts or put any ads on Yahoo or eBay. So as I just said, anyone can apply MyCard with email address and phone numbers. So it's really, really hard to check out the real identity of the account owners. And out of curiosity, because I haven't dealt with this case, it's popular now in Taiwan, but I haven't met them. So I Googled it with my card, Zhapian means fraud, my card fraud. And you can see the date, 2010, 2011. So it's really popular now. And as far as I know, that and so far no perpetrators have been tracked down. But I think with the news and propaganda of this new trick, people would become aware of it, and hopefully less and less people will be fooled. So how about the application of the rules? It's the same. The fraud itself is punished in the right square, and the Skype and MSM account unauthorized access is in the left square. Okay? So now you've known fraud, online fraud, that is really popular, the most common one in Taiwan. And now let's take a look at the copyright infringement. It's also a very common type of cyber crimes too. The offender would first download the films or music from some other people, then upload these files to some space on the internet to share with others. All these conducts are, of course, done without authorization from the copyright owners. And this is the infringement of the economic copyright of another by means of reproducing and public transmitting the work without authorization. And these offenses are against Copyright Act, Article 91, Section 1, and Article 92. And 91, Section 1 is about the reproducing of the work without authorization. And Article 92 is about the infringes on the economic right of another person without authorization by means of public transmission. And again, Article 100 says that the offenses specified in this chapter are actionable only upon complaint.
Like, suppose I download the movie, but I don't put it on a file sharing site, I send it to her for her own use. Is that public transmission?
If the public transmission is defined as if you are, it's available online, I should say that, available online. So the defendants, for example, he downloaded from some, I don't know what site, maybe by P2P software or anything else, and he uploaded the file into the space on internet, and the files become available online, that is public transmission.
Does it have to be available to the public, or what if it's, I put it in a way that only she can get it?
That is not called public online, public transmission, but that might be fall into other means defined in Article 92. So the public online, the public transmission is only one of the means to infringe the copyright, the copyrights. Okay, so there are some websites that offering big space for its members. For example, this Gogobox website. It offers a 100 gigabyte free space to the basic members, and even bigger space for members of higher levels. Yeah. So this is the convicted judgment. In this case, the defendant uploaded many movies, as you can see on the right, on his Gogobox website space without authorization, and these movies are therefore became available online. That is public transmission. And so the defendant's offenses include reproduction and public transmission. And therefore, the copyright owners filed a complaint against him. And during the trial, the complainers, which are the copyright owners, had reached a settlement with the defendant. So at last, the defendant was sentenced for 50 days imprisonment, and which can be commuted to a fine. So this is relatively light imprisonment. I think that's because they reached a settlement. Yeah,
is
please.
It regarded as reproduction?
Reproduction like this, you download to your computer, that is a reproduction. And you upload to the space online, that's another reproduction. So there are two reproductions. And you upload online and it becomes unavailable online, that's public transmission. So that's, many different conducts. Please.
So what role does the copyright owner play in the criminal proceedings? You said that
they have. Oh, they are complaining. The copyright owners are the victims. Right. So they are the ones who is qualified to file the complaint. Okay. So in this case, the copyright owners are the complainants. So they file the complaint against the defendant, and during the trial, they reach the settlement. That is another benefit to give the copyright owners, the victims, the right to file a complaint, because it becomes his weapon to enforce the defendants to reach a settlement. Yeah, because after the settlement, and the complainant can withdraw his file of complaint. So that is a useful weapon. Yeah. Okay. And this is the chart attached to the judgment you just saw. And in the charts listed all the movies being infringed. And since the complainants are filed their complaints, and so they are listed in the charts too. So this, for example, this one, this is Chicken Little. Chicken Little. And it belongs to Disney Pictures. So the name of the films and the complainants will be listed in the charts. And the film companies here, the seven companies are the complainants in this case. Yeah.
So there's this the criminal side of this, but what about Gogo Box? Do they then move this content? Yes, that's another
big problem. We have an amendment in the Copyright Act in 2006 about the safe harbor, and we everyone knows the safe harbor. Actually, we adopt that from the U.S. Copyright law. So the safe harbor says that once the copyright the website owner, the ISPs do the notice and takedown actions, and they will be away from the liability to compensate. But that is only on the civil liability. On the criminal liability, it's still on a case by case basis, which means that if the whether the website owner knows that they are infringing, or the its customers is infringing the copyrights, depends on that fact in that case. So it's on a base by case basis. Yeah. And As to the rules, in the copyright infringement cases, internet and computers are as tools to facilitate the offense. Therefore, the Copyright Act itself is sufficient to cover the conducts. And last, let's look at the lineage case again. I could find some other cases, but I think you are familiar with it. So let's just use it as an example on the new chapter. Okay, the perpetrator infected the computers with Trojan and access to the accounts without authorization. And then after the possession of, after the electronic and magnetic records. And that goes to the left square. And in 358, unauthorized access. 359, delta alteration. That is the virtual treasure, and 360 computer interference. That is the infection with the children. So now you are the experts on cybercrimes in Taiwan too. Let's take a look at the challenges we are facing and jurisdictional difficulties. And I think the jurisdictional difficulties are one of the biggest challenges in cybercrime investigation all over the world. And for us, it's more to do with China, because in the past, we don't have any kind of law enforcement cooperation with China. And so once we found that IP address was assigned in areas within China, we can do very little about it. And plus, people in China and people in Taiwan speak the same language, and geographically we're so close to each other, so the perpetrators are more than willing to take advantage of all the factors so they cooperate closely to commit crimes, especially fraud. So consequently, the cross-border fraud was really, really rampant. And finally, in 2009, we have a breakthrough. We had reached a joint crime fighting and judicial mutual assistance agreement with China. And in this agreement, there are a lot of aspects we promised to cooperate, including information exchange, focus on fight against crime, assisting detection, document delivery, handover of criminals, return of crime process, a lot of aspects. And based on this agreement, the police officers cross borders in Taiwan and China began to cooperate on combating crimes. And one of the most successful cooperation took place in last August. A huge cross-border fraudulent criminal organization was tracked down, and around 450 perpetrators were arrested. Among them, 121 were in Taiwan. So this agreement is really a breakthrough for us. And data retention is another another challenge. Because so far in Taiwan, we don't have the Data Retention Act. And as you know, then when investigating, the police will trace the IP address. But the log files are in the retention of ISPs. So since the victims don't always file a complaint while they are aware of being hacked right away, so there are occasions that when the police officer begin to investigate, the ISPs no longer retain the log files anymore. So far, the ISPs in Taiwan would retain the log files for 2 or 3 months on average, but well, we hope they can retain that longer. And evidence perseverance. As you all know, that electromagnetic evidence of cybercrimes can be easily deleted or destroyed. And remember, in the online fraud case, the perpetrator's real IP address could be concealed behind some proxy servers. And in many cases, these proxy servers belong to some small companies which may not have the qualified IT employees. So whenever they find that their servers were infected, they just format it. So everything's gone, and the police could not trace the IP anymore. So therefore, how to increase both the knowledge and motivation for them to preserve the electronic evidence is also a task for us to be dealt with. The last one is, but not the least one, is the unfamiliarity with the new technology crimes. Because in Taiwan, most of the prosecutors and judges don't have the technology background, I mean. So we do need a lot of on-job trainings to know more about these new tech crimes. And sometimes the knowledge gap between prosecutors and judges can become a difficulty too. For example, sometimes when we apply for a search warrant, and the judge will be reluctant to issue the search warrant, not necessarily based on the consideration of human rights protection or due process, no, but just because of the unfamiliarity with the new tech crime. So they are more conservative to issue the warrants. And that is another big, big challenge for us. And I know that these challenges exist not only in Taiwan, but more or less in all over the world. But I do believe that it takes a whole globe to combat cybercrimes. So as long as we have the same belief, we are head toward the same direction, I believe that one day we'll overcome the difficulties and create a safer cyberspace. So thank you. I know you've asked some questions, but before you ask questions, in order to understand your questions more correctly, I'll deeply appreciate if you can speak slower and keep away from the hard words. Okay, that's it. Yeah, please.
I was wondering about the extent and size of the criminal organizations behind this.
Mm-hmm.
So you said in that large cross-border bus,
yes, yeah,
there are hundreds of people.
Yes,
and they were
the
all
biggest
part of the same group.
Yeah, the biggest one, as you said, as you just see, there are 451 caught. And there might be some other perpetrators not being arrested. But in that case, in last August, that is one of the biggest case we...
But were they individual people?
No, they are organized.
So they're all part of the same...
Yeah, they are organized. But the bottom level of them might know very little about the whole scheme, but at the top of them, they know the whole scheme. So many bottom members of the organization, the criminal organization, may just go to withdraw money from the bank every day. That's all he knew. That's all he knew. But he might know the money is some dirty money, maybe from the process of some criminal offenses, but he wouldn't know the whole scheme. So only the top perpetrators in the organization know the whole scheme. Yeah, that's why we want to catch them. But for now, we always catch the ones that are at the bottom. Yeah.
There's a very strict financial control in the form of anti-money laundering,
yes,
regulations.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Particularly within the financial services industry.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that in Taiwan? What sorts of...
Yeah, we have that too. And money laundering. But unless you reach a certain amount, there won't be any monitor of the money go back and forth in your account. So the perpetrators are smart. They will keep the amount under that limit so that the money will not be monitored. But we have that. Remember our ex-president? Oh, that's shame. Anyway, our ex-president, he was deeply corrupted, and he transferred a lot of money abroad, and that was under the money laundering. So he was caught and in jail right now. Yeah, please.
You mentioned the Internet Cafe is in a funny position. On the one hand, you said that it's a problem because they just destroy the evidence by reformatting, but of course, they need to do that because, you know, their main interest is to, you know, get back up and running, and if they, you know, don't erase the computer and reformat it from scratch, then, you know, they can't get back in business and use that system.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they're also a victim. So,
yes, yeah. But sometimes I don't really think they're victims because, you know, they run that for business. They offer the computers for the online players.
Right,
but online
if people
game
lose confidence
play.
In their security, then they will go to their competitors instead of there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
if a customer loses confidence in the cafe's security,
mm-hmm.
then the cafe will lose business to competitors who offer better security.
Yeah, but you know it's hard for we have thought of that to ask the internet cafe to record every customer who come in so that we can trace the customers. But it's so hard because the internet cafe refused to do that because in that case they lose the competitive with others because if you every time you come to my internet office I ask what's your name, can I see your ID, you will not come here anymore.
Right.
Yeah, but now we ask them to set up the monitors, you know, the monitors on every seat or on every corner.
Oh,
so although they don't record the real names, but we can see the image and that is helpful too. Yeah. Yeah, please.
Yeah, most of the crimes which you spoke about were the online frauds.
Mm-hmm.
So they are primarily relating to consumers and their lack of awareness about the entire situation.
Yes.
So I would like to know exactly like what are the, because like, I know for US, like in US they have a lot of consumer education programs which are done, even in India to a certain extent we do so.
Mm-hmm.
What are the different consumer related educational efforts which the government initiates?
I think we have that kind of education, or the government will do the propaganda to alert you to be careful when you do the online transactions. But sometimes I think the victims are tricked or are cheated because the ads, the merchandise in the ads are cheaper than other sellers. So they think, oh, this is really cheap. I can get a good bargain in this transaction. That's why they are cheated. I think that's the most important reason. Yeah.
So you talked about copyright, so that's one for unauthorized sales. But do you see any instances of people buying things online for like legitimate products like handbags and
mm-hmm.
shoes and all this sort of thing? Does any of that happen online now, or is that all still something that's done in the physical space?
You
like,
mean people buy things online?
I mean counterfeit goods sold online. Like
oh, a lot.
Counterfeit
okay.
Physical goods.
Uh-huh.
Like
yeah,
goods.
A lot.
Yeah,
trademark. Trademark. Yeah, that's a lot. And
okay.
I can tell you. Yeah, we have a lot of cases like that. And honestly, the merchandise, a lot of them come from China, you know. So, yeah, they even can do this. People in China put the ads online and put the ads online on the websites in Taiwan. So people in Taiwan will say, oh, this is, for example, this LV bag is so cheap, so they ordered it online. And most of the time, the victims, the purchasers know that it is a fake one. And the merchandise will be mailed from mainland China to Taiwan. So once we caught once the purchaser is caught with the fake LV bag, we ask them, where did you get it? And he said, from online. And where is the seller? He know nothing about that because the sellers are in China. So, yeah, a lot, really. Yeah, please.
I can't read Chinese characters, but is there any... any plans or anything on those websites, eBay, Yahoo, which says beware,
yes,
don't do
yes,
that?
Yes, a lot. Be careful. Now there are a lot of perpetrators online, so be careful. A lot. Yeah, really,
and still it happens.
Still happens. Still happens. So actually, honestly, back in Taiwan, I seldom buy things online. But when I'm here, I do it very often. Yeah, a lot. Still a lot.
And sorry, a related question. So there's also a reputation section.
Yes.
And there's you can see how many transactions has that person.
Yes, yes.
So
yeah.
Is there a correlation between, you know, this person is new, only one transaction, and therefore you shouldn't trust?
I don't know. I saw there might be, but sometimes I remember the perpetrator will hack or buy the buy the account from other people, and they they use the account to put on the advertisement, the fraudulent advertisement. And sometimes that account itself has no credits at all, no seller credits at all. But still, there are people being fooled. So it's not like that the perpetrators buy the accounts of highly credits on the website. No, not like that.
So a follow up on that kind of. But so in the U.S., people buy things on eBay. You actually can, in most cases, if the seller allows it, pay directly to their bank account through an electronic transfer, not using PayPal.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of transactions are done by PayPal.
Yes.
What I'm wondering is, in Taiwan, is it common for legitimate transactions to be done using the same kind of transaction? That's
yes, very common. That's
okay.
Very common.
So people wouldn't expect it to be suspicious that they would have to make the payment through
No, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah, it's common to ask for the sellers to ask to transfer into the bank account, personal bank account. It's very common. Yeah. Please.
Do you have cases with some perpetrators hacking the IDs of some famous online website, for example, maybe Yahoo, so that the personal information of the users are disclosed and used for some other cases? Do you often have cases?
We have that of banks. You know, banks.
Banks.
We have that. But we haven't tracked down the perpetrators behind. Yeah, but we have that. It's especially banks. And sometimes the BBS websites in the colleges. Yeah, we have that. Perpetrator hacked into the server and get a lot of the personal identities. Yeah, we have that. But it's so hard to shake them.
On that note, there is a story in the United States that I think British Petroleum had a computer with all the IDs, social security numbers, and phone numbers of people they had paid because of what happened in the spill. And someone lost the laptop. So they've been sending out mails to everyone that they screwed in the past saying, look out for identity theft, you might be screwed again. But yeah, I mean, identities, they sell for a lot of money if you get
it. Yeah, I heard that in China, some of our colleagues, some of the police officers, when they went China to visit, they see piles of personal identity selling on the street, you know, piles and piles. And a lot of them are the high officials in Taiwan. So yeah, that's it.
So you can be on the street and just see
piles of paper and the police officer even took a picture of it and put it on the PowerPoint and showing to us. But not my name in it. So I don't know. Yeah, please.
It's really good news to know that the cops will actually answer the phone and do something. No, it is, because in the States most of the time, oh, that sounds like something for the Secret Service. The pizza's getting cold, bye. My question is this. Are the records of cybercrime reports interrogated in any systematic way?
Can you say that?
Are the records when a cybercrime report is actually made? Is
report?
It, are the records aggregated and analyzed in any systematic way?
You mean
way?
The report?
When someone files a complaint, a victim files a complaint for a cybercrime, is a record created?
Yeah.
And in a centralized way that you can then analyze statistics from.
Yes, we have that. Yeah.
And how automated is that?
For example, the victim went to the police officer and filed a complaint,
right.
And the police officers will make the interrogation, right, and make some records. And Later on, if the police officer keep investigating and collect enough evidence to establish the case will be transferred to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor can decide either to prosecute immediately or to collect more evidence. And all these traces will be, there are records for all these conducts. electronic paperwork, both. Yeah, both. Yeah, we have that. Yeah, so we have the data. Yeah.
Is there one big database of all the cybercrimes committed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we have. I'm going to.
So can someone looking into this say, I want to see I want to see every last record of Magic Mop fraud?
Oh, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's just like for example, the online the fraud. And how many frauds do we have in past years in 2010 or online trademark? I have the file here. Yeah.
But a cop can't say, I want to see all the records of this kind of fraud against mm-hmm. this kind of
yeah.
brand in this prefecture. You can't do that yet.
Something like this.
Okay.
Sorry, it's all in Chinese. But now you can see that it's 95 means 2006, 96 means 2007, 97, 2008, and these are the cases, the new cases, the accumulation, the cases prosecuted, the cases with simplified prosecuted, and deterred prosecuted, and discharged, and convicted, and the convicted rate. And here are the different types of offenses. This is the offenses focusing on the cybercrime. This is cybercrime online. This is forged. This is obscenity. This is fraud. And these are the numbers. But these numbers are small because it's only in 1 year. And this is the IP crimes. Are you asking this? And this is the gambling, others, like this. Yeah, that's it. That's what we have. We cannot go like, tell me which ones are the Magic Mop. No, not like that.
Right. Opportunity here if the police are establishing consistently formatted records for analytic efficiencies.
Whereas uh-huh.
if everyone puts down a record in exactly the same format, the same crimes using the same fields,
mm-hmm.
suddenly you can interrogate all those records for patterns
mm-hmm.
to shape a case, distillation
mm-hmm.
of records into...
I'm not sure if... I think the police have, but for prosecutors, we don't have that because we're not the initial investigator, but I think the police have that system.
Well, the police have it. That's a really good thing. It's a big advance for most of
Well, maybe I should ask them. I think they have, because... just like I said, if some perpetrators are not caught and the case lie there,
right.
and the police officer will know that some kind of the cases have not been tracked down.
Right.
And after sometimes when the cases accumulated to a certain amount, the police can find out the trace in the
right.
in the case and
right.
can trace out maybe some other evidence.
Right.
So they have data like that.
That's
but,
great.
Yeah,
that's
but not for.
That's a great story.
But
that's
I think
story.
FBI is better than that. Okay, sorry.
But people don't report the crime. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's
is
the.
It,
yeah.
The FBI may have a great database, but
mm-hmm.
if no one comes in and says that they've been victimized.
I don't know, but in Taiwan we do that. We do that a lot. As long as you're fraud, you're fooled, and we even have a phone number called 165. You can just dial 165. And you can directly talk to the police officer and tell him that when and where and how I'm cheated, I'm fraud. Yeah, you have 165. You can directly dial that number. And when you dial that number 165 and you tell the police officer will then ask you which bank account you transfer your money in, and they'll record that account and issue that account as alarm account, which means that people have to be aware of this account because someone has been victimized. Yeah, please.
Do you often encounter cases where the criminal is in Taiwan, but the victim is in some other country.
Oh, well, we don't know that unless they come to Taiwan to file the case. But yes, I know that. For example, the case you saw, the cross-border collaboration in fraud. Yeah, some Taiwanese people cheated the people in China. But yeah, and vice versa. Yeah. Anyway, for us, there are borders. For them, there are no borders. Yeah, only money. Only money, yeah.
Get legal help requests from other countries?
Sometimes. But it takes a long time. Yeah, sometimes. So, yeah, we do. That's it?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.